It's time for the Tom Sumner Program. The Tom Sumner Program is a live variety show with music, comedy, and special guest interviews every Monday through Friday. The Tom Sumner Program. Old-fashioned radio for a new generation. Our theme music is Fruit of the Louvre, provided by Flick composer-producer Howard Eddy. Stay tuned, because it's on now. Old-fashioned radio for a new generation. The Tom Sumner Program.
Texas church attack leaves 26 dead. I'm Sean Cantwell. A man dressed in black tactical style gear and armed with an assault rifle opened fire inside a church in a small South Texas community on Sunday, killing 26 people and wounding about 20 others in what the governor called the deadliest mass shooting in the state's history. The dead ranged in age from 5 to 72 years old. Authorities didn't identify the attacker during a news conference Sunday night, but two other officials, one a U.S. official and one in law enforcement, identified him as Devin Kelly. The U.S. official said Kelly lived in a San Antonio suburb and didn't appear to be linked to organized terrorist groups. Kelly received a bad conduct discharge from the Air Force for allegedly assaulting a spouse and child and was sentenced to 12 months confinement after a 2012 court-martial. As he left, the shooter was confronted by an armed resident who grabbed his rifle and engaged the suspect. A short time later, the suspect was found dead in his vehicle at the county line. Several weapons were found inside the vehicle, and Martin said it was unclear if the attacker died of a self-inflicted wound or if he was shot by the resident who confronted him. The man who confronted Kelly had help from another local resident, Johnny Langendorf, who didn't identify the armed resident but said the man exchanged gunfire with the gunman, then asked to get in Langendorf's truck and the pair pursued as the gunman drove away. Langendorf says the gunman eventually lost control of his vehicle and crashed. He says the other man walked up to the vehicle with his gun drawn, staying there until police arrived. Declaring that North Korea was a threat to the civilized world, President Trump vowed Monday in Japan that the U.S. will not stand for Pyongyang menacing America or its allies. Trump, in one of the Asian capitals threatened by North Korea's missiles, did not rule out military action and exhorted dictator Kim Jong-un to cease weapons testing like the missiles he has fired over Japanese territory in recent weeks. The president also denounced efforts by the Obama administration to manage Pyongyang, declaring again that the era of strategic patience was over. In local news, the Saginaw Police Department is investigating a possible homicide. On November 4th at 9:05 a.m., Saginaw police were dispatched to 422 McGregor Street for a man that was found dead inside a vehicle. Officers found Brandon Pennywell, a 21-year-old man from Saginaw, dead from what police say appears to be one gunshot wound. Saginaw police detectives and Michigan State Police are investigating the incident as a possible homicide. Anyone with information is asked to call Crime Stoppers at 1-800-422-JAIL. The Flint Police Department is investigating a shooting that left one man dead. At 1:50 p.m. on November 4th, Flint police officers were dispatched to the 1600 block of Kentucky Avenue. Officers found a 25-year-old man dead at the scene, possibly from a gunshot wound. A suspect was located at McLaren Hospital and taken into custody as a person of interest. Police are investigating the case as a homicide. Anyone with information is asked to call Crime Stoppers at 1-800-422-JAIL. In sports, Peter Mrazek made 36 saves, and Martin Furk and Anthony Mantha each had a goal and an assist to help the Red Wings beat the Edmonton Oilers 4-0 on Sunday. Franz Nielsen and Gustav Nyquist also scored. The Red Wings have won 3 of 4 to reach 7-7-1. The Oilers dropped to 4-8-1 and have yet to win two games in a row this season. When thinking about getting back together with your ex, standing outside of their second floor bedroom window at 1 a.m., probably not the best way to go about it. That story in the forecast in 60 seconds.
Potholes. Yes, it's that time of year again for those pesky potholes. The Genesee County Road Commission is asking for your help in reporting potholes so they can fix them for you. This past winter's unseasonable warm, combined with occasional heavy snowfall, have really taken its toll on our local roads. The Genesee County Road Commission's work crews are out every day working to repair the roads and fix those aggravating potholes as fast as they can get to them. Potholes form quickly during freeze-thaw cycles when water penetrates the surface of the pavement and then freezes, which then pushes up the pavement. Vehicles on the road then push the pavement back down, breaking it and creating a pothole. Our aging pavements, combined with this year's freeze-thaw cycle, will result in an increase of the number of potholes on our local roads. Unfortunately, this will inflate the cost of maintaining our roads in safe condition. You can report a pothole by emailing gcrc@potholes.org or calling 810-767-4920 or at the GCRC Facebook page. Please report a pothole, and the Genesee County Road Commission will do our best to fix it quickly.
A Stamford, Connecticut man was charged after police said he was found looking through a window at the house of a girl he previously dated. Police charged 23-year-old William McAdoo of Stamford with disorderly conduct. He was held on a $500 bond. Officers were dispatched to a residence in Westport around 1 a.m. on October 24th for a report that a known man, later identified as McAdoo, was looking through a second-floor bedroom window of the victim's home. Police said the victim previously dated McAdoo but hadn't spoken to him in months. McAdoo was taken into custody and charged before appearing in Norwalk Superior Court later that morning. He's scheduled to appear in court next on November 29th, according to court documents. Flint weather for today, partly cloudy with a high of 42. For tonight, partly cloudy with a low around 30. For tomorrow, mostly sunny with a high of 45 and a low of 26. And for Wednesday, sunny skies with a high of 45 and a low of 28. That's the latest. I'm Sean Cantwell.
I'm Julie Lopez with Crime Stoppers. Your help in solving this case could be worth up to $2,500. David Walker was murdered on Saturday, September 3rd, 2005 in Flint. He was working as the clerk at JJ's Market on East Carpenter Road near Dort Highway. He was found shot to death behind the checkout counter around 1 o'clock in the morning. Robbery did not appear to be the motive. If you have any information that can help solve this case, please call Crime Stoppers at 1-800-422-JAIL or go to p3tips.com. You remain anonymous and help get criminals off the streets. Remember, your voice matters.
The Tom Sumner Program. Old-fashioned radio for a new generation.
Hey, this is comedian Brian McCree. You are listening to the Tom Joyner. No, man, it's the Tom Sumner Morning Show.
Stream us live weekdays at 9 Eastern at TomSumnerProgram.com.
The Tom Sumner Program. Old-fashioned radio for a new generation.
Hey, good morning, everybody. Welcome to a new week, a new day, a new show here on the Tom Sumner Program. I'm Tom Sumner. We've got Sean Cantwell at the news desk. And lots of interesting stuff for today's show. We're going to do some homework today. We're gonna review, or preview rather, the things that will be on the ballot in Flint and around Michigan from 10 to noon. We're going to open the phone lines. You're welcome to participate in the conversation if you have some thoughts about some of the candidates that are running. Or maybe there are some people you'd like to see running who aren't. In any event, feel free to participate and call in during the show between 10 and noon today. The number, so you can put it in your speed dial, is 810-339-8255, 339-TALK. We're going to open those phone lines at 10 o'clock, and you'll be welcome to participate in the conversation as I review the, let's see, what do we have on the ballot tomorrow? We have the, of course, the recall election against Flint Mayor Karen Weaver. She's defending herself against all comers, and there are about 17 of them, and most of them have been on the show. Now, I posted some easy to get to links on the Tom Sumner Program Facebook page. If you visit that page and scroll down, there's a Your Vote, Your Voice banner on two different posts, one for the mayor's race, and most of the candidates were guests on the show. I think probably 14 out of the 18 that will be on the ballot tomorrow. The mayor did not respond to invitations to come on the show before the election. She's been on a few times, but she didn't make it back during the campaign. Of course, she was busy running around with Jesse Jackson, so I can understand that. But 14 out of the 17 that are challenging her. Links to those interviews, or to the hour in which the interviews appear. You may have to go to that hour and then, you know, fast forward, or, you know, scroll through a little bit. But the links are pretty easy to find if you go to the Tom Sumner Program Facebook page. The links are in the comments section. You might have to open the comments up to pick which candidates you want to get a chance to listen to and hear what they have to say. And we did the same thing with the city council races, because the city council is also up for election or re-election, all nine wards in tomorrow's election. And all of those candidates appeared on the Tom Sumner program, and there are links to those to the hours in which they appeared on the on that same page. You might have to scroll down to find it a little bit, but if you go to the Tom Sumner program Facebook page, you can find those links and really do your homework. If you're a little bit lazy like I am, you can hang around here between 10 and noon, and I'm going to go through and at least talk about the various candidates that are running, and in both the city council and the recall against Mayor Weaver. There are some proposals on the ballot, in one in Flint that involves the Flint School Board shrinking in size. They're asking voters if they should drop from 9 members to 7, and that will be on the ballot tomorrow. There are some other proposals around Genesee County. We'll go through some of those. And there are some local elections around the state of Michigan that you should be keeping an eye on. For example, the Detroit mayor's race is also happening tomorrow. So lots of interesting stuff to talk about. And again, I'm interested in your thoughts as well. I'll go through the information and share the information. But I would love to hear from some listeners. Again, that number is 810-339-8255. Beginning at 10 o'clock, we will open those phone lines up, and we'll start our homework for tomorrow's election. By the way, it is my birthday tomorrow. I don't keep reminding people of that because I want lots of cool stuff. I'm going to be 61 years old, and I have all the cool stuff I need. But what I would really like for my birthday is people to go out and vote. The 7.5% in the primary in August was kind of pitiful, and I've been sort of campaigning that you know, if people want to recognize my birthday, want to do something for me for my birthday, what you can do is get out and vote. Like they say in Chicago, vote early and vote often. But before we get to tomorrow's election, there is a growing green movement around the country, and I'm going to talk to somebody who's just written a book called The Green Amendment, and her name is Maya Van Rossman, or Rossum, rather, and she's going to be phoning in here shortly. We'll be talking with her. Now, we have another program note of interest, or at least it should be of interest if you're interested in tomorrow's election. We'll have our regular show at 9 o'clock. In fact, Mary Ellen O'Toole will be here, or well, she'll be here by phone. We're gonna check in with Mary Ellen O'Toole, a retired profiler from the BAU. She is a forensic consultant and a regular pundit on CNN, MSNBC, Fox, and others. Whenever there's a mass shooting like the one yesterday in Texas. And we're going to find out what her take is on that event and whether these things are happening more often and what to do if you can't even consider yourself completely safe in a small town church. Then maybe we need to rethink our situational analyses when we are out and about. Anyway, we're going to talk with Mary Ellen about that. Plus, our planetary pundit, Richard Walker, astronomer, will be here. And we had scheduled someone to talk about gerrymandering. We're going to try and see if we can get that. The person we had scheduled has a conflict tomorrow. Of course, a lot of people that we might want to talk to on Election Day are busy with Election Day. But we're going to see if we can find somebody from the movement to change the way districts are drawn, and we'll see if we can get something scheduled in that slot to replace the guest that we had scheduled. Anyway, but we have a bonus track, if you will, actually a full bonus episode of the Tom Sumner program will be airing at 9 p.m. tomorrow night. We're going to follow the election returns as they come in. We did this for the primary, and it went pretty well. And this is a pretty important election, so you can find out what happened first right here on the Tom Sumner Program with Paul Rozicki, Henry Hatter, Janworth Nelson from East Village Magazine, and our armchair politics pundits will be providing commentary and analysis as we track the votes coming in. That's tomorrow night, Tuesday, election night, starting at 9 p.m. Join us. It should be pretty interesting. In the meantime, I'm going to take a short break, and we will be back with Maya Van Rossum to talk about the Green Amendment. We'll let our broadcast partners squeeze a few words in edgewise, and more of the Tom Sumner Program straight ahead. Don't forget to give us a call later.
The Tom Sumner Program. Old-fashioned radio for a new generation.
East Village Magazine is the monthly neighborhood magazine read all over Flint. With support from grants, donations, and advertisers, East Village Magazine's talented local writers give you an in-depth look at local news, issues, and people that make Flint, Flint. Copies of East Village Magazine are available at many of your favorite shops and restaurants around Flint or online at eastvillagemagazine.org. East Village Magazine, community-focused and community-supported.
My name is Dale Pazinski. I'm 19 years old, and this is how I live United. I've always been kind of a computer geek, and I found a way to use those skills to help the homeless in my community. For people facing hard times, computer skills and a basic resume are so important. It may seem like a small thing, but it makes a huge difference in people's lives. So with United Way, I created a program where I work with the homeless. Together, we go through their whole job history, write a resume, and then save it on their very own USB drive. We provide workbooks and training certificates. I even budgeted for cupcakes so we can celebrate as a class when one of our people gets a job. That's huge. When somebody says, "Hey man, that job that you helped me apply for, I got it." That's what living United feels like to me. My name is Dale Pazinski. I help people achieve financial independence. So I don't just wear the shirt, I live it.
Give, advocate, volunteer, live United. Go to liveunited.org, brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Imagine a journey down a picturesque riverway. Imagine your Flint River, 142 miles of recreation, natural beauty, and precious resources. The Flint River is a vital resource that is available for all to use and enjoy. The river and its ecosystem provide unlimited recreational opportunities and natural beauty while supporting wildlife in a vibrant landscape. We all have a responsibility to protect and preserve this precious resource. Learn more at flintriver.org. Or call the Flint River Watershed Coalition at 810-767-6490.
Flint Community Schools encourages area families to enroll today for the 2017-2018 school year. Reinforce to your child the importance of a high-quality education by enrolling early at Flint Community Schools. To enroll, visit the Administration Building at 923 East Kersley Street in Flint, which is open year-round. For more information or for answers to common questions, visit flintschools.org or call 810-760-1000.
Discoveries. They happen when we least expect them, in places we thought we knew. And discoveries have a way of teaching us a little more about ourselves along the way. Welcome to Flint and Genesee County, where up north meets down south. Home to Michigan's largest county park system and a vibrant culture. A place filled with discoveries we've yet to make throughout acres of beautiful lakes, wetlands, and woods, and in the diverse city beyond. Where the uplifting melodies of gospel choirs fill the air. Where the work of renowned artists color the galleries and museums. Where the fresh fruits and vegetables at the downtown farmers market awaken our senses. And where the cultural center and planetarium broaden our view of the world. Let's spend a few days enjoying the wonders of Flint and Genesee County, where the joy of discovery is pure Michigan. Your trip begins at Michigan.org.
The Tom Sumner Program. Old-fashioned radio for a new generation.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, you're listening to The Tom Sumner Show. Send your donations today. Check out the website for more details.
Stream us live weekdays from 9 a.m. to noon at TomSumnerProgram.com, made possible by listeners like you.
The Tom Sumner Program. Old-fashioned radio for a new generation.
And welcome back, everybody. Joining me now by phone is the author of a new book called The Green Amendment. We're going to find out what that's about with author Maya Van Rossum, who joins me now by phone. Maya, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me, Tom.
Now, you're involved with the, is it Delaware River Keepers? What is the name of that group?
Yeah, so I'm the Delaware River Keeper. That's my official title. But my organization is the Delaware River Keeper Network, and we've been around since 1988, and for most of that time I've led the organization. And we primarily work for the water resources of the Delaware River.
Okay. Well, you've probably heard about the events that have happened where we broadcast from in Flint, Michigan, and what has happened when we tried to get water from our Flint River, and I fear our river is getting a bad rap now because everybody says everything went bad when we hooked up to the river, and it wasn't. It was not treating water properly and maintaining pipes and a bunch of other things that entered into it. But is it true that 65% of the country is getting its municipal drinking water from local rivers?
So that sounds like the right percentage. But as you said, really the problem in Flint and in so many places partially is the pollution that we put into our waterways, but it's also what we do with the water after we take it out. And as you said, in Flint, the river wasn't properly cared for, and the river water wasn't properly cared for as it was transported to Flint residents, causing the devastating health crisis that's unfortunately being faced now.
Is Flint the canary in the coal mine for a lot of cities?
You know, unfortunately, there are so many cities and there are so many communities that are being devastated by environmental contamination and environmental pollution. So it is one canary in the coal mine, but I'm sad to say that we have many across the nation. And that's one of the reasons why I wrote the book, because I think that our laws have failed us, whether we're talking about state laws or federal laws. They have really failed us because they've allowed the contamination of our water resources, of our air, of our soils, of our food, to not just continue, but continue with the approval of the law. And so it's time to change that. It's time to get a higher level of protection for our natural resources so we get a higher level of protection for all of us who depend upon those natural resources for our very lives. And that's what really what the book is about, is how do we get there? It's based upon a tremendous success that we had in one of the Delaware River watershed states, which is really what inspired the book. And that's to get constitutional level recognition and protection for our natural resources in a way that really makes a legal difference, not just pretty language, but a substantive legal change in how we protect our environment.
To what degree is going the constitutional amendment route a protection against fluctuating regulatory authority?
It's a tremendous level of protection because our constitutions are above the law. And if you have an environmental rights amendment well-written and properly placed in the Constitution, then if you have a situation where your legislators or your regulators can make the claim, well, I complied with the law, and therefore I did what I was legally responsible to do, if even after they can show that they complied with the law, if you get a level of environmental pollution or damage that violates the constitutional provision that has been written, you then, as people, have a constitutional claim, right? So right now, you know, when people's rights to free speech or freedom of religion or whether freedom of the press is violated, you know, people rise up firmly and passionately, and they can point to their constitutional right to free speech, freedom of religion, and these other rights we hold dear. And in those situations where they're claiming a constitutional violation, even if a legislator or a regulator can point to a law and say, well, we complied with that law, we all know that if you comply with the law but violate the constitutional right, you still have a problem. And you cannot say that you've actually complied with the law. We don't have that scenario with environmental rights amendments for the most part across the nation. So in these places where we don't have well-written, properly placed constitutional provisions, if a legislator or a regulator can point to a law and say, well, we complied with the law, then there is no higher power upon which people can challenge the fact that their health has been harmed because of environmental degradation. Green amendments flip that, and it gives people that greater power to hold lawmakers accountable when their environmental rights are violated.
Now, is it a is this a challenge state by state, or are you thinking of something at the federal level?
Really, it's both. So, you know, what we have right now in the United States of America is Pennsylvania and Montana have environmental rights provisions in their constitutions, in the Declaration of Rights sections, the Bill of Rights sections, which gives the highest level of protection to the people of Pennsylvania and Montana's rights to pure water, clean air, and a healthy environment. In all the other states in the nation, you don't have that same highest level of protection. There are 33 states, and Michigan is one of them, that have environmental language in their constitutions, but the language is written such that it's either a statement of policy or the power is literally given to the states and to pass laws that protect the environment. And so you're back in that dynamic. If you have a state legislature has passed a law, but it's not a very protective, they can say they've complied with the law and the Constitution, and you have no other way to hold them accountable. And then we have 15 states that have nothing in their constitutions. What I want is in all those other states, in the 48 states that have nothing or something lesser than what Pennsylvania and Michigan have, I want them to go forth and get constitutional provisions in the Declaration of Rights sections of their constitutions that give this highest level of protection and create a movement in states across the nation fighting for these constitutional rights. And as we get the conversation and the synergy going around the power and importance of constitutional level protection in state constitutions, we will bring people to the place where they recognize, you know what, we need a federal constitutional provision too. And then we would have a federal provision which would hold our federal legislators and our president accountable when they violate our environmental rights, whether or not they can point to some law that they've complied with.
Now, there have been a number of issues that have gotten a little bit of news lately. President Trump, for example, wanting to pull out of the Paris Accord. There have been some studies and reports that have been released by the Lung Association and other organizations like that with regard to how standards are working and what the standards should be and so on. And I've had several conversations with environmentalists about that, and there seems to be a feeling that corporate America is getting the idea that people want environmentally sound practices in business and in public administration. Do you think it's possible that the free market is coming around?
I think that there are many in the business world that are coming around that recognize as you said, how much people value buying a product that protects the environment at the same time it serves whatever need they're trying to accomplish. And for some companies, that does mean the way they're changing their business operations, the way they're manufacturing products or how they're undertaking their housing developments or how they're pursuing their energy goals. But for the most part, we don't have that real responsibility at that highest level in business boardrooms. We instead have boards of directors and high-level leaders in business operations recognizing that people want environmental protection and then just crafting really great marketing plans to suggest that their product is environmentally protective. But in reality, it's not. Or maybe it's a little bit protective, maybe it's a little bit better, but it's not what it could be in terms of environmental protection because they are just trying to comply with the law rather than really going that extra mile to do what is right to protect our environment and in so doing, protecting the health and the safety of our communities, like the communities in Michigan, in Flint.
Well, Flint, at least with regard to air and water, has made significant improvements in the decades since General Motors was such a big footprint in Flint and has had groups like the Flint River Watershed Coalition have gone to great lengths to help nature repair the Flint River, and I think the Flint River gets a bad rap because of its historic pollution from the auto plants here. Is that kind of true around the country? Are there water groups like yours that have been helping to clean up the rivers as they flow now?
We have wonderful organizations across the nation focused on water, focused on air, focused on reducing the use of dangerous toxins and pesticides and herbicides, focused on growing healthy foods in sustainable ways, whether you're talking about meat or you're talking about fruits and vegetables. And we have had in the recent history of our nation tremendous laws like the Clean Air Act and the Clean Water Act that have really helped make a difference. And when you take those laws and those community organizations fighting for environmental protection, we have seen really important progress. In fact, when you look at just the Clean Air Act, you can see that we've had hundreds of thousands of diseases prevented and lives saved because of the passage of the Clean Air Act. But we're at a moment now where we are either just holding ground, at least under the current laws that we have at the state level and the federal level, we're sort of holding ground or we're backsliding because we continue to have more and more development and more industrial operations and new kinds of industrial practices like fracking for gas and oil that our laws never anticipated. And so as a result, we've come a distance, which is important based on the work of the good organizations that you've talked about and these laws, but we need to do much, much more if we're going to save our planet and save our communities from climate change as well as from continuing water pollution and air pollution. What we have in place isn't strong enough to help those community groups that are fighting for healthy environments. They need something more. They need something stronger. And what I believe they need is they need a declaration in state and federal, in the state constitutions and in the federal constitution that their right to pure water, clean air, and healthy environment are inherent, are indefeasible, are inalienable. And when they get tromped on by legislators or regulators, that people have an immediate right to go to the court and defend their rights to a healthy environment and challenge the intrusion by government officials, either directly or by allowing activities of others, the intrusion onto that right to a healthy environment. We need that extra level of protection if we're really going to be protecting our communities and giving community groups, watershed associations, and others the real tool they need to go that last few miles to really protect our communities, our environment, and our futures.
Politics is playing an increasing role in this. How do the parties rank in terms of environmental conservation? And you know, it could be, you know, whether it's the two big box parties or third parties like the Green Party. How does it play out in our political agenda?
Over the history of environmental protection, I think that both parties have had a good record of doing important things for protecting our environment. You know, the Clean Air Act was signed by President Nixon, for example, and of course the Paris Climate Accord was signed on to by President Obama. So when you're talking about the big parties in the history of environmental protection, this, thankfully and rightfully, preservation of our environment has been largely a nonpartisan issue. Maybe it was partisan in a moment or in a particular fight, but you know, over the history, we've really had all parties doing the right thing when it came to environmental protection, because they recognize that regardless of what party you're at, you're in, you know, you need to breathe healthy air and eat healthy food and drink healthy water if you want to have a good, long, healthy life. Unfortunately, we are seeing right now a tremendous rollback of even the environmental protections we have in place today, which I suggest are already not strong enough. And so rolling them back is making it even worse. And we do have a president in the White House that is very actively trying to roll back the environmental protections that we do have. And he is being supported by many of the legislators in his party in Congress, in the Republican Party. And that's really unfortunate, because environmental protection should not be, is not a partisan issue. We all need a healthy environment, but we're in that reality moment. And one of the things I hope to change with this book and getting this conversation going about the right to a healthy environment is I hope to bring the conversation back to where it needs to be, focusing on the people, focusing on protection of our natural resources, and ensuring that every political party understands that they have an obligation to rise up and defend people's rights to a healthy environment. And by having this good conversation, no matter what party you are in, if you are running for some sort of elected office at the local level, state level, or federal level, my hope is that by the end of next year, you will be asked the question, if you are faced with the opportunity to vote to protect people's environmental rights over the rights of an industrial operator to spew pollution into the air or into the water, where do you stand? And they will not be voted into office if they do not unequivocally say, I will stand, I will vote for, in every instance, the people's rights to pure water, clean air, and a healthy environment. So I think we can change the negative political dynamic and the rollback situation we have right now by getting this conversation going about the importance of giving highest level constitutional protection to our environmental rights and making the right to a healthy environment on par with our private property rights, our gun rights, our religious freedom rights, our free speech rights, all those other rights we all hold dear and have learned about for our entire lives.
Maya, why call the book The Green Amendment and not something like Clearing the Air or something that might not be looked at as political?
Well, Clearing the Air is a good idea. There are a lot. That's a good one. But I think, you know, I don't want to step back from the you know, I'm not embarrassed to say that we really are fighting for a change, and it's as much a legal change as it is a political change and a social movement that we want to sweep the nation. I mean, I think people appreciate and embrace their constitutional rights. And for the most part, I think people don't really realize that they don't, in fact, have a right to a healthy environment, that our laws are written to give more protection in many instances to the desires of corporate interests to create pollution than they give to the rights of people to have pure water, clean air, and a healthy environment. And if we can shift their thinking to say, you know what? Not only do I believe in my heart that I have the right to a healthy environment, but I want to make sure that I legally have that right and that that right is on par with my private property rights, for example. I think we start to change the way people think about this. We start to change the way they talk about their environmental rights. We start to change the way they behave in their lives every day, how they vote. And I think that that's a good thing. So I'm not concerned if it's considered a political conversation, a legal conversation, or a social movement conversation, because it really needs to the work to get constitutional level protection, highest level protection for our environmental rights, needs to span every conversation in our nation. And I do want to make clear, I don't want to end the conversation without acknowledging, Michigan does have in Article 4, Section 52 of its Constitution, Michigan has a provision about environmental protection. But where this provision falls short is it leaves the responsibility to the legislators to pass legislation to protect people's, to define and protect people's environmental rights.
Who, unfortunately, in Michigan have passed off to regulators. And various agency heads.
That's right. And so that's exactly how the constitutional provision is written. It's written to make that happen. But if we had a new provision that was in Article 1 and in the Declaration of Rights section and made the right to a healthy environment an inalienable right reserved to the people on par with their other inalienable rights, then when those legislators or regulators rendered a decision or issued a permit or passed a law that resulted in people getting polluted water that damaged the quality of their lives, the people could go straight to the courts and say, you have violated my constitutional right. And I think that that is just a very powerful thought process as well as a very powerful legal reality. So I like the Green Amendment because I think people love their constitutional rights and they feel empowered by them. And that's what green amendments, I hope, will do, honor people's environmental rights and make people feel more empowered to fight for them every single day against every decision that impacts them.
Maya, we just have about a minute left before we go to break, and I was wondering if you could stick around and do another segment.
Oh, I'd love to.
Okay, great. And I'm just a little bit concerned about the title, the Green Amendment, because as polarized as this country is, I could just see an awful lot of political and corporate leaders looking at anything with the word green in it and rolling their eyes.
But you know what?
How do you get the conversation, past that?
So I think really whatever the title was, even the great Clearing the Skies title, right? I mean, if it is about environmental protection, those who do not see value in protecting the environment, perhaps for their, back pocket bottom lines and how much money they're going to make, I mean, they're going to push back against it regardless of the title. They're going to be pushing back against
the substance
in the book.
We'll pick it up there when we come back from break. I'm talking with Maya Van Russum.
The Tom Sumner Program. Old-fashioned radio for a new generation.
Flint Community Schools encourages area families to enroll today for the 2017-2018 school year. Reinforce to your child the importance of a high-quality education by enrolling early at Flint Community Schools. To enroll, visit the Administration Building at 923 East Kersley Street in Flint, which is open year-round. For more information or for answers to common questions, visit flintschools.org or call 810-760-1000.
East Village Magazine is the monthly neighborhood magazine read all over Flint. With support from grants, donations, and advertisers, East Village Magazine's talented local writers give you an in-depth look at local news, issues, and people that make Flint, Flint. Copies of East Village Magazine are available at many of your favorite shops and restaurants around Flint or online at eastvillagemagazine.org. East Village Magazine, community-focused and community-supported.
The Tom Sumner Program. Old-fashioned radio for a new generation.
If you have a knack for sales and fundraising and would like to become a valued member of a fun team, you could be a good fit for the Tom Sumner Program. Help us develop the underwriters needed to continue to grow our brand. Write to us at TomSumnerProgram.com.
The Tom Sumner Program. Old-fashioned radio for a new generation.
It's Thursday night, and you're grabbing drinks with some friends. Started off with a pitcher for the table, which quickly becomes two. There's pool. And there's the photo booth.
All right, everybody, squeeze in. Say cheese!
Followed naturally by an order of wings. And another.
Can we get some extra ranch sauce?
Then there's the ceremonial nightcap.
So what are we doing this weekend?
And lastly, it's back to the car. Which, if you're buzzed, could be the most expensive night of your life. Getting pulled over for buzz driving could cost you around $10,000 in fines, legal fees, and increased insurance rates. Nothing kills a buzz like getting pulled over for buzz driving, because buzz driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Discoveries. They happen when we least expect them, in places we thought we knew. And discoveries have a way of teaching us a little more about ourselves along the way. Welcome to Flint and Genesee County, where up north meets down south. Home to Michigan's largest county park system and a vibrant culture. A place filled with discoveries we've yet to make. Throughout acres of beautiful lakes, wetlands, and woods, and in the diverse city beyond. Where the uplifting melodies of gospel choirs fill the air. Where the work of renowned artists color the galleries and museums. Where the fresh fruits and vegetables at the downtown farmers market awaken our senses. And where the cultural center and planetarium broaden our view of the world. Let's spend a few days enjoying the wonders of Flint and Genesee County. Where the joy of discovery is pure Michigan. Your trip begins at Michigan.org.
The Tom Sumner Program is made possible with support from Flint Comics and Entertainment, the world's leading free comics and entertainment newspaper, at flintcomics@gmail.com.
The Tom Sumner Program. Old-fashioned radio for a new generation.
Hey! This is the Unknown Comic, and guess what? You're listening to the Tom Sumner Show right now! And now too, and even now.
The Tom Sumner Program. Old-fashioned radio for a new generation.
And welcome back, everybody. My guest this hour is the author of a new book called The Green Amendment. She is Delaware River Keeper Maya Van Rossum. Maya, welcome back. Thanks for sticking around.
Yeah, I'm happy to do so.
Now, Maya, we've been talking in the last segment quite a bit about the current state of affairs and advocating for a green amendment at the state constitutional level and the federal constitutional level. What is the case made by your book, The Green Amendment, and what does it propose?
So what I propose is that in every state across the nation that does not have an environmental rights amendment that rivals what exists in Pennsylvania and Montana, that the people of that state go forth and fight to get one. And what that really means is that means a constitutional provision that's included in the Declaration of Rights or Bill of Rights section of the Constitution that very clearly makes the reality, the truth, that people have an inalienable right to pure water, clean air, and a healthy environment, that the state has an obligation to protect that right, that that is a right that belongs to not just the generations who are here today, but the generations that are yet to come, and that is written in such a way that if that environmental right is infringed upon by government action, that the people whose rights have been damaged, who have been lost, are able to go directly to the courts to fight to have their constitutional rights defended and protected, like the rights to free speech, property rights, freedom of religion rights, as we've talked about. And the book really makes the case that the environmental laws we have in place today at the state level and at the federal level are not strong enough to protect our environmental rights. In fact, are written in a way that allow pollution. They literally permit pollution. They don't prohibit it. They just define how, when, where, and to what degree it can happen. But the laws written today really are about how do you pollute, not stopping all that pollution that's so critical. The book makes the case that environmental protection is not just beneficial for the quality of people's lives, for their health, for educational development of children, but that also economically and in terms of jobs, going down the green path, going down the environmental protection path, yields much more benefits economically and in terms of jobs development, and then goes on to explain what does it mean to truly have an inalienable right to a healthy environment. How do you write that constitutional provision and get it into your state constitution and ultimately into the federal constitution that vindicates the kinds of environmental rights, that accomplishes the kinds of things that I'm talking about?
Is zero contamination possible, and how do you write law or even constitutional amendments that don't allow contamination to a certain level?
Yeah, it's really not about no pollution, no development, no activity.
Because there are some contaminations that are naturally occurring.
Right, but we're talking about human-induced damage, right? And there are some contamination that's occurring, like in the geology of the Earth. You have benzene and naturally occurring radioactive materials.
Arsenic.
But through the process of fracking, those toxins get pulled out of the geology in the earth and brought to the surface. So when they're in the geology, no problem. When they're brought into the surface, huge problem for the quality of people's lives. But constitutional provisions are not about, you know, nothing, because, of course, any activity we engage in on the earth has some impact. But it's how do you undertake that activity in a way that protects the quality of the water, the quality of the air, the quality of the soil, the quality of the food, the health of the forests that are necessary to protect and support our lives. And just like with every other constitutional right, after we've written the constitutional provision, it's going to take time through legal actions, through advocacy, through discussions, you know, in political circles and in community living rooms and coffee shops, to really define what does it mean to have an environmental right. You know, when do you cross over the line of devastation so that you've now infringed upon somebody's right? So it will take time to really define that. But the truth is, for all of our constitutional rights, it takes time to define them. I mean, our rights to free speech and freedom of religion, you know, were passed well hundreds of years ago, literally, in our, you know, first constitutions. But still today, we have legal cases that are brought forth struggling to define, you know, how far is too far. And we're going to have to do the same when it comes to environmental rights. But we need to first put in place that baseline protection and recognition that a healthy environment is an inherent and inalienable right, an indefeasible right, that every government official at every level of government has an obligation to protect. And then we have to work together to define exactly what it means. It doesn't mean nothing, but it does mean that we pursue our actions and our activities in a way that accomplishes our goals while best protecting our environment so people can live healthy lives sustained by healthy natural resource systems.
But you raised an interesting point when you said a lot of the regulations that are written, like for example, just take one, the EPA says that 15 parts per billion of lead is allowable in water. It sounds, you know, when you craft a regulation or a law or an amendment, for that matter, in that way, you're essentially saying it's okay to put lead in the water as long as it's no more than 15 parts per billion. How do you word it? How do you set those standards without that double-edged kind of message?
So you may, you know, still write your laws and your regulations to set an allowable limit, you know, give a specific number for what's allowed. But then when you have a constitutional provision, what a constitutional provision requires, it requires that government officials don't simply check the box of saying, okay, I allowed this industrial operator to discharge 15 parts per million of lead, and therefore I've complied with the law and I've fulfilled my duty. It requires the regulators and the legislators to go another step and to say, okay, this is what the law says. Now, if in reality I allow this new industrial operator to discharge into the environment, what does the science tell me will be the impact to this community? How much pollution is already in that water body? So if I allow the addition of this additional pollution, will I be going over that tipping point from a safety situation to a hazardous situation? You know, what are the true facts on the ground? And looking at cumulative impacts, looking at the history, and also looking at what your decisions mean for future generations, the generations here to come, but future generations, because, you know, sometimes damage, for example, to wetlands and deforestation, the harm isn't immediate. It's a harm that accumulates over time. So you really, a constitutional obligation ensures that government officials don't just check the box of whether or not they specifically complied with the actual language of the law, but they have to look at the science and the true facts on the ground and make a conscious decision about whether or not allowing this action or activity will flip us over the edge into a dangerous situation for protecting people's health and the quality of their lives. And that's really important and meaningful. So that's one of the ways that a constitutional provision changes the way lawmakers go about performing their duties to protect our environment and to protect the health and safety of our communities.
My guest is Maya Van Rossum, and I can't believe how fast the time is going, Maya. The name of the book is The Green Amendment. Maya, we just have about a minute left. I always give guests an opportunity to let listeners know where they can find out more about what we've been talking about. Obviously, the Green Amendment is ground zero for finding out about what we've been talking about. But are there some especially good resources that you can recommend people to look at that can better explain the conservation impacts, the public health impacts of pursuing this?
Yeah, absolutely. So there are two places to go. One, if they want to learn more about the book or even invite me to come out and speak with their community about this further, mayavanrossum.green is where you can get all that information. And I will happily go to any community to speak about this issue directly and personally with them. The other place to go is we have an initiative at the Delaware Riverkeeper Network called For the Generations, no spaces, forthegenerations.org. And there we have a bunch of resources about how to secure constitutional level protection, a toolkit to help folks get started that lets them know what's the status in their state, and a lot of really great information to just get them at that starting page. And it, again, provides people a way to get back in touch with me,
Maya,
if they want to explore it further.
Thank you so much for being here.
The Tom Sumner Program. Old-fashioned radio for a new generation.